Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We have reached the end of our DIY health series. Joining us again is Newsweek magazine health editor Kate Daly. She's been with us the entire way. And the whole purpose of this series, Kate, was to give people really, really simple things that they could do to make themselves healthier, right?
Absolutely. I think people can get really confused when it comes to what they should do for their health. And so we tried to break it down, but there still seems to be some questions.
There are questions. And to be totally clear, you are not a licensed physician.
No, I am not a licensed physician. I'm just a health reporter. And there are probably much better health reporters out there and health editors. But we have done a lot of research and hopefully can give people some clarity and some places to start looking.
Okay, so we talked during this series, we talked a lot about things. How to eat, how to exercise, finding a doctor that you trust and like. When we went out and asked people for their own questions, a theme emerged. It was something that we didn't actually cover during the DIY series, and that was testing and what tests people need. Take a listen.
My name is Buchabelo Nkomo. I think a lot of men don't want to do the testing for prostate cancer because of the way the test is made. I would like to know if there's any other way of making a test for prostate cancer which is not as violating as the one which is used.
So, Kate, first of all, you know, guys, women go through this twice a year, but is there a different way to test for prostate cancer?
There are a couple of different ways to test for prostate cancer, and both can be invasive depending on, you know, where you're coming from. There's the PSA, which is a blood test, and then there's the digital rectal exam, which is a digital rectal exam. Both are slightly unpleasant and slightly invasive, but compared to the alternative, they're kind of a necessary evil. So it's possible in the future that they might have ways to test for prostate cancer that are less invasive, but right now these are the best measures we have, and they sure beat, you know, suffering from prostate cancer.
It's like all the complaints about the test for colon cancer, and I've talked about it, I've written about it, I've had colon cancer, and I don't understand why people just don't get the test, and they say, oh, it's so unpleasant. Well, so what? You know, first of all, it's not that unpleasant. Second of all, this can save your life.
Right, and it's kind of an extension of all the other issues we see in health, you know, where we talk about you need to go to the gym for 30 minutes a day, you need to eat all these fruits and vegetables. It's the type of thing where it's these sort of simple steps that require a little bit of sacrifice that you just have to do. Like, there's no trick
to
get around exercising.
Well. Okay.
Right.
Well, this whole theme came up also from Pamela. She wrote this question on Facebook. She wrote, my cousin-in-law was diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer at the age of 40. That seems pretty young for that diagnosis. Fortunately, he's in remission, works fervently to spread the word about men having their PSA tested early. My husband is in his early 30s. I wonder if this is a test he should think about asking his doctor to perform before he turns 40. What's the best way to bring these questions up with physicians who may not be open to the idea of testing earlier than current recommendations?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of controversy right now. The American Cancer Society just kind of walked back. They retracted an ad that they just put out that says screening is believing, because there is a lot of controversy about what screening can actually find, how soon it can find it, and when the screen is more dangerous than the chances of having cancer. Now, with prostate cancer, because it's a blood test, because it's not something where you're getting exposed to radiation like with a mammogram, that's a safer test. But still, the current recommendations say that you should make an informed decision, and that after 50, that's really just when you should start talking about it. The only time they say to do it earlier is if you have a father or a brother who's tested for prostate cancer. That being said, especially because the test doesn't really have a lot of long-term health consequences or health risks, if you really are going to be worrying, if you're going to be stressing out about this and you think it's a test you want to have, you should talk to your doctor. Like we said earlier in the show, that your doctor is really working for you and with you. So what they say doesn't have to be the final word. So a PSA that early sounds premature, but if it's something that's really stressing you out, then you should pursue it with your doctor. And if it's what you want, then you should hold your ground.
Okay, well, it turns out that testing is on a lot of our listeners' minds, as I said. Here's another question.
My name is Ken, and I'm from New York City. I've just been reading that C-reactive protein is something important to be tested for, in relation to heart disease or preventing heart disease. Normally we're tested for cholesterol and HDL and LDL. Should I be tested for C-reactive protein? Is it worth doing?
What's the answer?
Well, there's a short answer and a long answer. The short answer is no, it's probably not worth doing. We know that C-reactive protein, when it's elevated, it can signal distress in a lot of different situations. It's good after a transplant or after surgery. We know it's somehow related to heart disease, but we don't have clear answers. The longer answer, I guess, is that, you know, our focus on testing, as we're seeing in these questions, is a little bit misdirected energy, I think. I think people think as long as they get all their screenings, they'll befall whatever, you know, health problem could be coming their way. And in actuality, you just need to do these basic things. You need to start earlier than the test. The test is going to catch these health problems, some of which are genetic, some of which are environmental. But instead of focusing on getting all of your tests, I think we feel like if we get our test and get it screened, then we can catch things before they become a problem. What's better is to not have a problem to catch in the first place. And to do that, you have to do all those really boring, really basic steps we've been talking about all summer.
Five servings of fruits and vegetables, people. Well, there are some tests that you say that we really can't skip. I mean, one of them is something that Lynn referred to earlier. That's the colonoscopy for those who are 50 and above. But what are the other tests that we really just have to get done?
Well, and it's very subjective. It depends on your history. It depends on, your genetics, your environment. But the American Cancer Society has a great site that lists all those screenings. Mammograms are something that's important. The Pap smear is incredibly important. The good news is that as we learn more about these tests, we're learning that you don't need them as often. Mm-hmm. So you get the if you're a woman, you get your mammogram later. You get your Pap smear every other year, or in some cases every 3 years instead of every year. So it's important to talk to your doctor. There's a litany of tests that you should be getting depending on your health and your age.
But isn't it important to note that those numbers are baseline numbers based on averages? And if you have any family history, if you have any signs, if you have any symptoms, get in there earlier.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, to get on the radio and say, here's exactly what every person should do,
right,
is way beyond my pay grade. So it's important to know kind of what those markers are. And like I said, Newsweek.com has a great list of that. The American Cancer Society has a great list of that.
Right.
But then it's up to you to talk to your doctor and make that informed decision.
Okay. Well, we do have a question for you that has nothing to do with tests, really. And this is from Rachel.
I am wondering what kind of level stress plays in your actual health and what preventatively you can do, maybe through food or lifestyle, that can lessen your stress level, because I'm sure it impacts everything.
The answer to this kind of ties together everything we've talked about over this series, right, Kate?
Absolutely. Stress is one of those big things that the more we learn about it, the more we see what kind of effect it has on your health. If you're more stressed out, you're going to have more of that dangerous abdominal fat. If you're more stressed out, obviously you're not going to sleep well, and we talked earlier about the dangers of sleep. So when you're stressed out, you get all this kind of inflammation, all these negative health effects, and unfortunately, the best way to beat being stressed out is to not be stressed and to kind of look, which sounds like sort of a circular answer, but it's sort
relax.
Of like the best way to get exercise is to get exercise. It's one of those baseline things where there aren't a lot of tricks. You can eat foods high in antioxidants. They'll help.
Right.
Those are the really deep, kind of beautifully colored dark
but
foods.
But really,
berries.
It's just most important to get five of those servings in every day. Kate
right.
Daly is the health editor for Newsweek magazine.